Live from the heart of the universe, this is the online edition of the Life Changes Show.
Look at the bright lights. Look at the bright lights.
With tonight's guest, founder and CEO of Black In Travel and Black In Tulum, Nubia Young.
Night sky. Look at the night sky.
And performance guest, Paul McDonald. I am Mark Leisure, and now our host, the MC, the master of change, Filippo Voltaggio.
I had an interesting aha a while back, and I wrote it down thinking someday this might make a good monologue, and I think that someday is here right now, because today's episode is titled Discovering Your Authentic Self and Setting Yourself Free. That was inspired by our guest. So here's what happened. I was having a period of time where I was, oh my gosh, there was just a lot going on, and I was feeling blocked, and I was frustrated and all this stuff, but I decided to journal about it. Now, some of you might remember before autocorrect and before spell check, when you write a word, and I was writing it pencil and paper in my journal, and it doesn't look right. And it may or may not be right, but it might be actually right, but doesn't look right. So anyway, I wrote a word. I was trying to describe this feeling. I tried to lump all of what I was feeling into a word. And the word that came to me was this little five-letter word, and it was angst. And I wrote it, and it didn't look right. And I scratched it out and I wrote it again because I wanted it to be right. And that didn't look right either. So I felt like a kid in school and I had to go look it up. And I looked it up and I had spelt it wrong the second time, I think. Actually, the first time might have been right. I spelt it wrong. But because I had to look it up, I saw that there was a definition there. So I read the definition. And the definition was angst. This is according to Merriam-Webster Dictionary, is a feeling of anxiety or apprehension. And I'm like, okay, that's kind of it. And then I kept reading and it went on to say, a feeling of acute but vague anxiety or apprehension, especially philosophical. And that made me feel worse. I'm like, yes, it's acute, but vague anxiety. Like, it's just, I can't even put my arms around it. Like, what is this vague? And then it went on to say philosophical. So I had to look up philosophical, not that I didn't know what it means, but philosophical, which meant related to or based on a system of philosophy. In other words, it was all in my head. In other words, it was my belief system, my philosophy. And I thought, isn't that interesting? I'm having this experience, which is blocking me from not even my best life. It's blocking me from life. It's blocking me from this moment. It's definitely blocking me from joy and happiness. And it's just philosophical, it's vague, it's just my belief system. And oh, by the way, I'm trying to describe it, I don't even know how to spell the word of what I'm like. I'm thinking this is absolutely positively laughable and ridiculous. And I had this laughing moment. I wrote this all down and I thought someday I'm going to share this story. And as important as all the things might actually have been, The fact that I was feeling angst and I kind of recalibrated what that moment was. It's like, okay, well, all right, you feel angst, but it doesn't mean anything. So what do you want to feel now? So anyway, I think going into this conversation, I think we're going to discover some ahas along the way with our guest. And I know that as we have these conversations, that we can hopefully dispel and disperse some of the energy and also open up. And as our guest would say, is like, tear down those prisons or tear down those walls. And I can't wait to have this conversation with her.
You know what got rid of angst before autocorrect?
What's that?
Whiteout.
Nice. Now, back more than whiteout, and as important as that was, I think we need role models of people who from all different walks of life, who experience stuff and know that there's stuff and can corroborate it and say, yeah, and I still made it here, or and this is what I did, or this is what I'm doing.
We absolutely do, and that's what Life Changes has always been about. And at the end of the day, I think we are all each other's role models. And then it's, who are you choosing to be your role model?
You know, actually, and here's going to be a good choice in conversation with Nubia, our guest. But she writes on her website, if I can rewrite my story, so can you.
Well, there again, you know, I was saying choices and role models, but it's the choices that we make in how we address our changes. And do we choose to repeat the pattern or make a change? So very excited for tonight's conversation. I know it's going to be powerful.
And as our guest says, your more awaits. So again, discovering your authentic self and setting yourself free. This is episode 854 of the Life Changes Show. Our guest is an entrepreneur, a speaker, a global travel pioneer. She's founder and CEO of Black in Travel, Nubia Young. Welcome to the Life Changes Show.
Thank you for having me. I'm sitting here with this huge smile because I was cracking up laughing at the whiteout. You know what used to take out angst? Whiteout. And I just fell out laughing. Because that is so true.
So true. And wouldn't it be nice if we could just white out some of the things in our life and just like write over it?
Yeah. I mean, when you think about it, you can,
ooh,
right? Because the problem is that we live with angst every day, and realizing that we create the reality, even if the reality isn't actually the reality, it could be changed, right? And we don't tend to really focus on being grateful for the lessons.
Ooh. Yeah.
And we always want to ask why. And I remember somebody telling me, if you stop focusing on asking, why did this happen? Why did this person do this? Why did this person say that? And you start to internalize and say, why did I allow it? Why did I respond that way or behave? Why was I reactionary? Then you start to become more self-aware.
Wow. Wow. And then?
And then that's when you start having gratitude for actual lessons, because you're learning more about yourself and you're learning more about your strengths and your weaknesses. You're learning more about why you react in the ways that you do or don't.
Nubia, I want to learn more about you. And there are so many great phrases that you have on your website, on your videos that you share when you're speaking. And there's one phrase that actually is at the top of your bio. And I have to ask you, you have written, you know how they say, quote, life gets greater later. Well, I didn't know that phrase. I mean, I've heard a few people say it kind of in different contexts. That's huge.
It's just like aging fine wines and liqueurs. If you're into, you know, if you're that connoisseur, you know, the older something is, the more refined and tasteful it is, right? And that could even mean yourself.
Wow. And you're learning from all that stuff that's happening in the meantime.
Listen, every setback that has tried to put me in the ground and bury me didn't realize I was a seed all along.
Okay, let's start back when you were the seed of life coming into this world. I asked you because I'm listening and learning about you, and I'm thinking, You talk about like you all of a sudden became this, but no, I think you had that seed ever since you were a little girl. And you?
I don't know. You know, it's really hard because when you don't have anybody watering the dirt or the plant, how does it grow? So I grew up in survival mode. You understand what I'm saying? Because I didn't have those role models or mentors, as people would use that phrase more now. Because, you know, role models in the past were what, celebrities and entertainers. We didn't really know these people. We only seen what we saw on television. So I didn't have somebody holding my hand and walking me and guiding me. I just knew I was different. I didn't know what different meant, but I didn't agree with, you know, how people did things or said things, or I wanted to, like I, you know, you and I talked, I wanted to jump out of planes and go skiing and do all the things that at that time was coined as, you know, white people activities, or black people don't do those things, you know? And I was just like, but I want to, you know, I love Boy George and George Michael and all of the 80s and 90s hits. And, you know, I mean, yeah.
Wow. And you did all that.
I did all that because I always be, I'm also a Sagittarius. I don't know if I mentioned that to you.
No, not yet.
Which okay. means I'm full of fire and I am like, I am the nomadic sign of, you know, of the sign. So I like to move around. I like to try new things, eat new things. I was, you know, with a friend and we was out to dinner and she was like, your palate is so refined. And I'm like, when you travel as much as I do, you want to engage. I'm not that person who, and I'm sure everybody knows these people, I don't like that. And you'd be like, oh, you've had it before? No, I just don't like it. Well, how do you know you don't? You know what I'm talking about.
I have no idea. You crack me up. Okay, so all those things that you can't do this, you're not supposed to do that, we don't do that, and they do that, but we, how each one that you did, each thing that you did, like how did you convince yourself I'm gonna do it anyway, or I'm okay to do it, or like there was there a thought process, or did you shut it off, you know, shut that down and do it?
No, I've lived with imposter syndrome. I probably still have some of it today. I just, you know, I just like to throw stuff to the wall and see if it sticks. Like at the end of the day, you know, we only live one life. And even though I don't believe, I believe we go through many iterations of life, but technically you only live one life and I want to live mine to the fullest.
Okay.
You know, so I don't believe in things. If it doesn't work out, then just try it again in a different way. Like, you know what I mean? And I'm just one of those people. I've done so many things throughout my life. You know, I'm a mother of two. I've had jobs. My mother used to get on my nerves because she would act like because I didn't stick to one job that I wasn't, you know, secure, right? I didn't understand stability. And I'm just looking at her like, I just don't like the job. I want to try something else. You know what I mean? And I think those are lessons in life that we learn along the way.
Have some people turned around and said, okay, we get you, we support you?
Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. I would not have been able to have a business in Mexico for 5 years if I didn't have people that supported me fully. And I had about a 16% retention rate of return clientele that came year after year and was like, I'm here because of you guys. Like, you know,
nice.
Celebrities, entertainers, actors, actresses. I mean, we've had them all come through our door and everybody left knowing that they found a community where they felt like family, you know?
Wow. Where they could do some of the things with people that got them too.
Correct. Correct. In a foreign country, like, you know, you walk into a room and well, you walk into this establishment and you're like, wait a minute, I'm one of like 200 other people of color, you know? And then it's like New York in the building. And when everybody goes crazy or people start going, oh, you're from New York, me too. What part? Oh, wow, I went to, you know? And then you start, and then you just meet people along the way. People traveled by themselves and left with new friends forever, you know, or a new partner. They
So we're
might be the
gonna
Black and Tulum babies out there. I don't know, but.
So interesting. That'd be good to know. So obviously what we're getting here, and we're gonna talk more about it in a little bit, is that not only do you like to live life to the fullest, but you like to help people live life to the fullest. And that's interesting and special, especially when your journey, as you described it, single mom on Section 8 to what we're talking now, multi-million dollar enterprise. Tell us about that journey.
Wow. Yes, I was on Section 8 for about 15 years of my life. And honestly, it was a wonderful program. And I believe in utilizing anything that you can to help you evolve, right? Like when people think of welfare or Section 8, they think that you're like broke, really, you know, like at your rock bottom, but it's really just assistance. It's like, you know, just a helping hand. And not everybody is able to get that assistance. So I was grateful for it. And I was never one of those that lived in public housing. Like I had Section 8, but I had a corner unit townhome in Fairfax, Virginia, one of the most affluent, you know, places in Virginia. And it's because I sought for more for my kids and for myself. I always knew that there was more out there. That's why my site talks about your more. What is your more? You know, I knew there was more to life than just what I seen day after day. So I didn't get my passport till I was in my 30s. I was 32 when I got my passport. And I only did that because my uncle was getting married in London. And once I got a little taste of being abroad, it was a wrap. Like, I was like, I love this, you know? I joined this group called Nomadness Travel Tribe, which was a bunch of other professionals who talked about travel and using credit cards for points and those kind of things. And I was learning so much that I was like a sponge, you know? I was like, this is amazing. There's other people like me. And then I started doing some more traveling. And then I was just like, it just defined my life, like even down to my partners. Like, if you didn't have a passport or you didn't want to travel, we couldn't date. You weren't for me. And yeah, I don't, you know. I started podcasting when I moved to Thailand, and I just podcasted about my life. Being, you know, a late bloomer into travel, having kids and doing all the things. And then people would actually write me and be like, me too, or oh my gosh. And I noticed that I became that role model or that representation for other women of color, especially that were late in their life, in their late 30s, early 40s. And they were like, I want to travel. I did this almost 10 years ago before it became a trend or a fad. You get what I mean? So I just started chronicling my life. And then we started interviewing other people. And that became huge. And we ended up, Chronicles Abroad was the name of the podcast. It became top 10 on Travel and Leisure's podcast, you know.
Nice.
And I was in tears. And that's when I knew that my voice meant something.
Nice. Nice. I was trying to do the math here. You don't sound like you've had your passport much more than 10 years or so, and you've almost been to 60 countries?
When I moved to Southeast Asia, it was one of those places where it's accessible. And I realized for me, I needed accessibility because I was able to travel throughout Southeast Asia so easy. I mean, you can hop over to India, you can go to Philippines, Cambodia, Vietnam, Laos. You know, it was so easy to get to and from. So majority of that was done in Asia. And then when you would go to Europe, we all know you can plane, train, automobile and go to multiple countries in a weekend in Europe. You know, I
Yeah.
went to Paris and then I took a quick flight to Morocco. Literally, like it was like an hour and a half, 2 hour flight. And I just went to Morocco for 3 days. And then I went back to Europe. And then I just traveled from like Paris to Italy to that's how I like to travel.
The way you're describing it, it sounds so fun and sounds like you were having fun. Now, obviously, there are experiences along the way that are not fun, and that happens to a lot of people. In a sense, did that help start? Like, I know you were in Tulum, and how did Black in Tulum start?
Honestly, it was like I would walk down the street and I would see another person of color and I'd be like, hey, you know, hey, sis, or hey, where are you guys from? How long are you in town? And then I realized that there was more of us than I knew, but we had no place to congregate and get to know each other. You get what I mean?
Yeah.
So I just talked to a business owner, the place that we've been at for a majority of our time. They had just opened about 10 or 12 days before. And remind you, this was in the midst of the pandemic.
Right.
So people were fleeing the US because they needed to get out of that bubble, right? And everything was locked down and shut down, but Mexico was pretty wide open. They had a lot of precautions in place, but Tulum specifically was very quiet. It was very just jungle. And when people got a hold of it and learned about it, it just became the hot spot from 2021 all the way to 2024. Nonstop, people were flooding Mexico.
Wow.
And I hosted a brunch. My first brunch had 25 people, but I had the right 25 people. I had friends that were influencers. I had people who had just moved to Mexico. I had people who were there on vacation from Canada, you know, and it was just like they had such a great time. They were like, we got to do this again. And that's how Black in Tulum was birthed.
We got to do this again. How many events so far? Since that brunch, have you had there?
Oh my gosh, I have hosted approximately 12,000 events.
12,000.
5 nights a week, 52 weeks a year for 5 years.
And to think of how many people you've touched and how many people have been supported by the gathering. And that's one of the things that I found also very interesting about you is you have this strong sense of community and gathering. Tell us, like, where did that come from?
Hospitality is my thing. I went to school for hospitality management, but I've always been that friend that when you came to my house, I took care of you. I was just like, what do you want to drink? You want a cocktail? You want a mocktail? You want the carbonated water with lime or with oranges or grapefruit? Like, I'm that girl, you know, I'm always elevating the experience of the people around me. I always want to make sure people are taken care of and they feel welcomed and they feel seen. I love to cook. So my favorite thing is hearing one of my guests like go, and I'm like, you like it? You know, I light up and they're like, I love it. And I'm just like, yes. You know, I like to see people smile. A smile is free, but it gives you so much energy to move on and go on and feel, I guess, yeah, just feeling seen because I grew up not knowing if I belonged. I was trying to find a place of belonging. So when people are in my presence, I like for them to know that they're seen and they're, valued.
Well, interesting, especially when they're not home or in their own home country and in a foreign country where they might not speak the language and all of that. How important is this?
It's extremely important because people felt comfortable, you know, and I hate the way I had to close my business down, but the people who did frequent Black and Tulum events, they also brought a lot of money into the economy. You know, the hotels, the restaurants, the excursions, the activities, and they played a role. It was like this beautiful ecosystem.
And you started all of that for all of them and yourself, all without funding from scratch, without actually real industry experience in the different aspects of that, right?
Never once have I worked with a sponsor. Never. I've never worked with a sponsor. I never reached out. I never did a brand deal or anything like that. It was all bootstrapped. And I've made many, many on top of many mistakes. But I've learned from them, you know, and I'm really one of those people that like to ask questions. I'm very inquisitive. So I will ask people, what was your thought? You know, what do you think? And I don't mind asking for help. At one point, I wasn't asking for help and I just was beating myself down. And I was like, I can't do this anymore, you know? And that's when I started to having to trust others to delegate. And to be honest with you, completely transparent, I'm still learning the art of trusting because having the wrong people in your corner can definitely tear your whole empire down. So I'm at this season right now in my life where I'm cleaning house and starting over.
Well, and you've had many seasons in your life. Obviously, as a mother, there are seasons in your
Oh,
life.
yes.
I heard you. Did you want to add to that, or shall we go on?
I mean, if anybody, even if you're an auntie or an uncle, I mean, kids will put you through many different like iterations of yourself. You know what I mean? But I'm not the same person that I was, right? I'm not the
Right.
same woman. I've evolved, I've grown. I've had to get rid of the old pieces of what used to be me, the versions of me that people will hold on to an old version of you, even though that version of you no longer exists.
Because you're sharing so much, I would love for you to share the answer to this question. How many times did you feel like I can't do this, I'm going to stop?
15 million umpteen times. Okay. Yes. I
Don't
mean,
mean to laugh, but you are making it funny, but it's
it was no, I'm,
hard
oh,
decisions.
oh, entrepreneurship is not for the faint of heart. Not for the faint of heart. I don't care how many hundreds of thousands, millions of dollars roll in. There is so many times. Listen, the more money I made, the more problems I got. I was like, when I didn't have all this, I seemed to be a little bit more like being able to move a little bit more freely. But, you know, when you are taking care of a company and you're trying to grow it and you're trying to, you know, make it the best that it can be, there's so many just moving pieces and parts and people, and you're just one person and everybody's looking at you for answers or needing this, and you're just like, leave me alone.
And you've never been in that particular situation or that one or that one because it's new. It's new as you grow, right?
And I'm very honest. I've said this to my staff many a times where I'm just like, look, guys, I'm trying to figure this out at the same time that it's happening.
And that's
Like,
why I'm hiring you for.
and I'm just like, can we round table this instead of you looking at me for, you know? And the funny thing about it is, as a CEO of the business, I would have people reach out to me and be like, hey, we met, you know, so and so place. I'm coming to Tulum. And I'm just thinking to myself, like, do you guys reach out to like the CEO of Apple and be like, hey, I got an iPhone and I just wanted to know?
I'm going to be in your area. Can you show me how to use it? Well, But because you are so accessible to so many, and you're present at so many of the events, or all of them, many or all?
None now.
Now, right.
Well, first 2 years, all. And then going into year 3, 4, and 5, I was just like, I had people to do that.
So let's talk about growth. So Black in Tulum, and now Black in Travel, so that it includes other cities around the world, of course. And now you've got something that is I think, very interesting, because it brings so much of what we've talked about together. And how do you pronounce it?
Ori? Ori.
Yeah, Ori. Yeah, Ori. Yeah. Tell us what that actually means and what you're creating for women.
So Ori is a word from Yoruba that means head. And I is also a word from Yoruba that means life. So basically, I put the two together to say you are the head. You are the priority, basically. You are the head of your table. So basically, it's a retreat, I would like to call it a retreat. So REI retreats are retreats for women. I'm starting with women of color because I just felt like Black women, they do carry the weight of the world on their shoulders. You know what I mean? And everything that's going on in the world right now is so disgusting. And we need to prioritize ourselves and our mental health and our rest, right? Because the culture in the United States is work, work, work. Mm. And nobody takes the time out, especially women. We don't take the time out to think about what we need, what our body is like. Our bodies are getting like riddled with diseases and everything else because we don't take the time to take care of ourselves because we're taking care of everybody else. We're taking care of the house. We're taking care of the kids. We're taking care of our partner. We're at work making sure we can keep our job. We're doing this. We're doing that. And you become not the priority in your own world. How does this happen? You know? And not to be sexist because, you know, we love you men, but you can't be born without a woman, right? So we go through so many things. We're the mother, we're the friend, we're the sister, we're the auntie, we're all of these different people other than just being ourselves. So I wanted to give women a space where we can come in an intimate environment, no more than 10 people per trip in different exotic, beautiful places around the world where we can connect and really focus on intentional rest, right? And culture, history, food, and met with luxury. Actually have somebody take care of you. Actually receive, like you show up and you don't have to do nothing the entire trip because I got you.
And how each potentially give to each other and get to know each other.
Correct. Because we deserve softness. You know, we're not always getting that. So it's more like restorative leisure. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's better than somebody getting sick and going to the hospital and having leisure there. Some people seem to, that's the only time they get to take off.
Well, even think about trips now these days. People go on a trip and they pack their itinerary so much that by the time they get home, they're exhausted.
I saw this. I did this. But how do you feel? Or like, how are you enriched? Not just your eyes and your mind, but your body, your heart.
And also it all becomes a blur. Because most people spend majority of their time on vacation trying to navigate. We got to be here at 2 o'clock. Okay, then we got to get back. Okay, now we're back at the hotel. We got to get shower dressed because we got to be at the dinner. You know, we have reservations at this place. Oh, we got to call an Uber. And you're already, your mind is already so busy, you know? And it's just crazy. So I really want to take that away and allow time for people to actually just enjoy the space that they're in. And that came from actually me living in Mexico. I had this beautiful condo and I would sit outside and just listen to the birds. And I would just let the breeze, you know, touch my skin. And I was like, how many times do we actually appreciate these little things that God has given us that are huge?
Right.
Right? The
Right.
blue sky, the white clouds, the sun, the heat from the sun. Instead, we spend so much time complaining that we don't take the time to just sit in gratitude and be like, wow,
So
look at how green the trees are, you know, that kind of thing.
You're not just leading people there, but inviting them to experience it and giving them permission to have that experience.
Exactly.
And you talk about that experience also as true community, like a community that actually cares for each other.
Yeah, because you don't realize until you're in something. And I think I mentioned this to you before, like it's kind of one of those situations where it's hard for people to understand what the true meaning of community is, because we all have very other, like it doesn't look the same for each person, right?
Yeah.
And it's truly beautiful when people can sit across from each other and know that they're there because they invested in themselves. They all did the same thing. So they have that common app, right? It's like going on a dating app. People, match.com is not free. So you think if you spent the money for it and everybody else spent the money for it, then they're more serious.
I got it.
You get it?
I get it. Well, there are so many different places I would love to take this conversation. Unfortunately, it's coming towards the end of at least this time. It's felt like such a teaser. So I want to do two things. I want to make sure that everybody has the websites. Now, we have them on the Life Changes Show page for Nubia Young. But Nubia, where's the best place for people to go?
The website, blackintravel.com.
Okay.
Blackintravel.com. And from there, you can find all the other avenues, but that would be the hub.
And the last question for now is, as you're growing, I know it's important to you. So how do you intend to remind yourself to be this beautiful, authentic person that you are?
I would say that the best thing you can do is just be yourself authentically with integrity and care. You know, try not to people please and really tap into what your body is saying that it needs. If you open your mouth and say, I'm tired, then that means you're tired. Go rest, you know? And when you start doing little things like that more and more and more, then you start becoming your true authentic self, because you know how to set boundaries. You know how to say no as a complete sentence without explanation. And you know how to say, you know, thank you for the invitation. I would love to, but today I don't feel like going. And that's okay. And know that that's okay. But that's being your authentic self.
Yeah. Wow. And not having to lie or make up an excuse for something. Ugh.
Unapologetically you.
Nubia, thank you for being happily you on the Life Changes Show. And it's been such a pleasure getting to know you and sharing you and your passion with our audience. I look forward to the next time we connect. All the best to you.
I appreciate you and have a wonderful, wonderful evening. I hope to see you again soon.
Yeah, me too. Thank you. Nubia Young. Oh my gosh, such a pleasure. And
I imagine that, it'd be a lot of fun to travel with Nubia.
Yeah, I know. And now would be the time with this new thing that she's doing. She's probably going to be present at those, and then probably in a year or two, not. So
I imagine. So, you know, the energy of everything she was sharing just had me focusing more and more about how travel is really community and how many joys I've had by going to different places and tapping into the local areas.
get to know different cultures. Yeah,
culture and the people. And,
yeah. And if we all knew each other.
I mean, it's like we, people think community, of course, breaking bread, eating, right? But travel, same way. You're changing the energy, you're moving around, you're learning someone's safe space or happy place or.
Yeah, it's interesting as you say that in connecting as we have with Nubia's people and her team and all that, everybody has, like, they've just been lovely and they've just been so accommodating and easy to work with and all that. So obviously she's creating that community in her business as best as possible.
Which is huge. There's a big difference between that and being transactional.
Yeah. Relationships.
Oh, imagine that.
Yeah. And that's a whole
other subject. No whiteout necessary.
That's a whole other subject. Would love to touch base with her on. But in the meantime, it's time for our Ask Dorothy segment.
Dear Dorothy, this is Anita, and I recently broke up with a man I was engaged to. I found out that he is a liar and a cheat, and I am happy to have discouraged it before marriage. However, this wasn't the first man that I almost married and then found out that they were liars and cheaters. Why do I keep falling for the same type of man? How can I know shortly after meeting someone that they are genuine?
Dear Anita, congratulations for seeing the truth before you tied the knot. That takes courage and clarity, and it might mean that you're also noticing a pattern, which means you've already taken the first step towards changing it. You are probably attracting the same type of man because familiar often feels safe. If you grew up around people who were charming but unreliable, your brain might confuse chemistry with familiarity. That warm spark can sometimes be a red flag in disguise. Narcissists, cheaters, and manipulators tend to be very good at love bombing. They say all the right things early on because they've had a lot of practice. Many people, especially empathetic ones, see the best in someone and ignore small inconsistencies, convincing themselves the good parts outweigh the bad, and very often hope outweighs caution. Sometimes in the excitement of a new connection, we rely on feelings more than facts, skipping the slow, deliberate process of vetting someone's character. There are several things to help you tell early on if someone is genuine. It could be good for you to think of dating as auditioning for the role of a lifelong partner. And you can ask questions that reveal values. You could ask about their longest friendship. Another question could be, what's the biggest mistake you've made and what did you learn from it? And you could also ask, when was the last time you apologized to someone? And Anita, let's understand that these are not trick questions, as they reveal humility, accountability, and empathy. It is important to know that most people can hide their true selves for a few weeks, but by 90 days, patterns emerge. Go slow enough that you're still observing if the mask starts to slip. And please listen to your gut and your body. If something feels off, but you can't explain it, take a step back. Our subconscious often catches red flags before we can logically articulate them. Pay attention to whether they do what they say they will do, and don't just see how they treat you, see how they treat everyone. Watch how they handle a small disappointment. See how they treat service staff. Notice if their words consistently match their actions in little things. Look for patterns, not one-off moments. Determine if they have long-term friendships. And let's not confront every red flag immediately. Just make a note. People will usually out themselves if you give them time and space. Remember, almost everyone can keep up a front for a month or two. If his behavior stays steady or improves, that's a great sign. However, if his charm fades, small lies grow, or you feel increasingly uneasy, you truly need to pay attention. So, dear friend, take it slow, and by doing these suggestions, I feel you will come to better and more supporting conclusions about your future dates. I thank you for this important question and trust that you will create healthier and happier relationships in the future.
Thank you, Dorothy. And if you have a question for Dorothy, please don't wait 90 days. Write her at AskDorothy@LifeChangesShow.com.
And with that, we have our performance segment. We are happy to have our performance guest, composer, arranger, pianist, and big band leader, Paul McDonald. Welcome, Paul, to the Life Changes Show.
Thank you. Thank you, Philip. Thanks for having me. Good to be here.
It's a pleasure to have you. And actually, thanks to our guest, I got to learn from you that you are quite the world traveler yourself.
Yeah, a little bit. It's funny that you had your guest on. She's into travel. Yeah, my parents are travel agents. And so I got to travel a lot when, you know, I was growing up. And then I worked on cruise ships for a number of years. So I did a lot of traveling. And also, you know, the music business takes you around the world. So, yes, I've done quite a bit of traveling.
Music's been around the world.
Yeah, it has. Yeah, that's one thing. The good thing about music, it's a universal language. So we can all communicate through music.
So, of course, you were exposed to music ever since you were a child. But there was a particular kind of music that you were exposed to that led you into music eventually as a teenager?
Yeah, I guess so. My parents always listened to jazz and, you know, the big bands back in the day. So I wasn't really, you know, when you're a kid, I wasn't really paying attention, but it was all obviously seeping in there. So when I finally got the opportunity to start playing an instrument with friends and hearing that music in a different way when you start playing it, it all struck with me. And you can never tell what kind of music you're going to be into. I was sort of struck by what Nubi was saying. She was, you know, an African-American growing up in the US, and she was listening to Boy George and George Michael.
Right.
And I was this nerdy white little English kid, and I was listening to Miles Davis and John Coltrane, you know.
Okay.
So, you know, the music, as I say, it's an international language, and we all get exposed to different things, and we finally find our genre that we resonates with us most.
Now, obviously, you have performed all kinds of music and you've written all kinds of music because you've written for so many different shows, BBC, for starters, on radio, right?
Correct. Yes.
And of course, for TV and film. So it's almost whatever is required, but you landed for the most part, actually, correct me if I'm wrong, but for the most part, you've got a big band and that's your big thing, right?
Yeah, that's where I'm really at home with a big band. As you point out, you know, with commercial demands, we have to write whatever the situation demands. But I'm much happiest playing with my big band and that combination of instruments, and it's the different voices and colors that it produces and the different genres you can explore with that is endlessly fascinating to me.
Now, I know you have worked with a lot of different performers, and as I'm saying this, I'm just recalling that I had forgotten you and I worked together.
That's right, you did.
I sang with your big band.
Yes, you did.
Had
you did.
The pleasure. I think it was actually something that you had arranged for me, come to think of it. That I was doing someplace. Anyway, it'll come to me. But nonetheless, that was a wonderful experience. And you've worked with so many singers fronting the big band. And you are mainly at the piano?
Yeah, mainly at the piano. And I do all the arranging for the band. Arranging is my thing. I love arranging and composing. And working with singers is a great opportunity because they give me, you know, each singer has a different approach and different music they want to sing. And that gives me the opportunity to explore different avenues and different sounds for the band.
Very nice. Well, we have a video of you and the big band and Hope Diamond performing on the Paul McDonald page at the Life Changes Show if somebody wants to check that out. But in the meantime, we're going to get to hear some original compositions, two of them in particular. They are both wonderfully long. When we get to experience you live, or people get to experience you live, as I have with other singers, actually, watching them and watching and listening to the band. Back when Typhoon, I think it was called, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, we were there for many years at Typhoon.
Yes, very special, that experience with the big band. And so, and you, how long have you been in Los Angeles?
25 years.
Okay, because so many performers know you and musicians, and they know your big band and they know your music. It's like, so I, especially in when we've wanted you on the show for so long, and then we were talking about Paul McDonald's finally going to be on the show. Oh, I know Paul McDonald, this one, from so many different walks of life and different musical genres and studios and whatnot. So you get around Paul McDonald.
Yeah, I do get around. In 25 years, you get to meet a lot of people in the music business, which is one of the great things about it.
And your music, to be sure. So the music is wonderfully long, and we're going to get to play, in one case, about 4 minutes, only 4 minutes worth, in another case, maybe 2.5, 3. But this first one, Dim and Blue, tell us a little bit about it before we hear it.
This is actually, it's a kind of a special piece for me. This was the first original piece I had broadcast. This is from back in the 80s. I'd done a lot of arranging of other music up to that point. But this is the first original composition that was broadcast. So this is kind of a special piece to me.
That is special. Well, here is Paul McDonald's original composition, pre-recorded with his big band. And you're on piano on this, correct?
Yes.
On both of them, actually. So this is Dim and Blue here on the Life Changes Show. We'll be right back. Ah, Dim and Blue, Paul McDonald and his big band. That was you as we were on the piano, right? As we were fading away. Where can people go to get and enjoy the rest of that and others?
Paul McDonald, my website, paulmcdonaldbigband.com. And you can see a couple of albums we have up there and some recordings and arrangements and all kinds of stuff and announcements about our upcoming shows.
Very good. And McDonald's is MC Donald, right?
That's right. Yes. Thank you for pointing that out. Yeah, MC Donald. Yeah.
Yes. And so you were sharing before we played that piece that this was special because it was the first piece that you had broadcast. Now, there must have been many other special moments when, especially as a young man sitting there saying, wow, that's my music. Like when it's playing in the theater for the first time, right? Or on TV.
Yeah, yeah. Those are all special times when you first get to hear your arrangements performed or broadcast or whatever. And, one of the great things about being when I was in London and now in Los Angeles is how many great musicians there are. And when you get to hear your work played by great musicians, that's, great singers singing your arrangements like yourself. Those are very satisfying moments. And I enjoy the opportunity to get to work with all the great musicians that are around the world.
I can imagine. Is there anyone that you would never believe that this person would be playing your music or this would be in a movie with so-and-so or something like that? Was there anybody that you thought, wow, I've made it?
Well, I don't know about making it, but I think probably the most special time was I got to work with Les McCann, who is a legendary jazz pianist from the 60s and 70s. Mm. And I got to work with him just a few years before he sadly passed away. Mm. And I grew up listening to Les McCann and eventually got to meet him. And he worked with the quartet and quintet most of the time. But we ended up doing a show together and I wrote big band arrangements of all these tunes along with him. I got to perform with him. And again, arranging music I'd grown up with the person who'd written them and played them was very special. And Les became a friend and it was a real highlight to work with someone that legendary and have to actually perform and write for him.
That's exciting. It's a lot of work, all of it is, but a big band is a big band. Now, when some people say big bands, they might be thinking 8 pieces or 10 or something. Yours goes up to how many?
17.
Okay. Yeah. And that's a lot of musicians, a lot of work, and you do so much of this by yourself, I know. But in this day and age, my hope and trust is that people will want to experience, much like we were talking about with Nubia, how people will want to or feel the need to travel and get to know other peoples and cultures and places. Do you feel there's an opportunity for more people to go and experience a big band more and more as the years progress?
I do actually. I think one of the things with the pandemic was that people were cooped up a lot of the time and they realized how much they miss live music. And so when they actually come out, and a lot of people grow up, especially younger generation, grow up without much live music or much less than we did when we were growing up. So when they actually do get to experience it live, it has a great impact. And especially when you hear a 17-piece band, people don't have much opportunity to hear that live. So when they do actually get exposed to it, it has a real impact on them. And that gives me hope.
It seems like it's more important than ever, especially since so much music is consumed on small devices or in our ear, right? To get that spatial experience and facial experience, like seeing, right?
That's right. Yeah, as I say, it's because especially younger people don't get as much exposure, because as you point out, most music is now consumed digitally. So when it's a huge shock to the system when they actually get to see it live and experience, the actual physical presence of the musicians and the music. And the more we can get people exposed to that, I think it's good for the it's good to experience those things. And there are many scientific studies done about the benefits of listening and experiencing music. And I think that's something we should encourage, certainly amongst young people, is to be exposed to more live music.
Hear, hear. Well, thank you for that, and thank you for what you're doing, and thank you for sharing your passion and your music with us. We're going to get to hear a short clip of Throwaway Blues. Anything you'd like to share about that before we air it?
No, that was just a project I did for the quartet, my quartet, and we just went into the studio one afternoon and wrapped this one out, and it came out pretty good.
And the title?
Throwaway Blues, that's kind of an expression amongst musicians when we're on a jam session and someone will just shout, let's do a throwaway blues, when that means you just make up a blues. So I thought, let's actually write one. So that's what this is.
I'm surprised I didn't know that one, or I've forgotten it. Interesting. Well, thank you for sharing that. And well, here it is. It's pre-recorded. Paul McDonald and his big band. You're on piano again. And here's Throwaway Blues, a portion of it, on the Life Changes Show. Paul McDonald, thank you for sharing that. Paul, before we go, we have to mention this: lights, camera, action, musicians, music, dancers, music from the movies.
Yeah, this is a project I've been working on. We've performed it a few times, but this is the first time we've had a chance to do it with a theater company. We're doing a show called Music from the Movies, which has taken some of my favorite music soundtracks and created a dance routines and vocal performances and instrumental ideas from the music through the decades, going right back to the 20s, right up to the present day. And we're going to do it with a big band and the Lineage Performing Arts Center in Pasadena. And we're going to be doing two shows in a couple of weeks, the 23rd and 24th of August. Again, you can see details on the website. But it's going to be a great show. We're looking forward to it.
Well, there's currently a link to the that for tickets at the Life Changes show, but if they go to Paul McDonald bigband.com, they'll find them there, right?
Correct, yes.
And everything else, and they can follow you there, Paul. What a pleasure it is to finally get to have you on the show and get to share your music with our audience.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It was a real pleasure to talk to you.
Well, likewise, until next time we connect, all the best to you.
All the best to you too. Thank you, Philip.
All right. Thank you, Paul. With a big thank you to Paul McDonald and another big thank you to Nubia Young. That is our show. On behalf of our executive producer, Dorothy Lee Donahue, our executive producer, Mark Lejeure, and co-host, Mark Lejeure, and on behalf of our whole family here at the Life Changes Show, I'm Filippo Voltaggio, your host, reminding you, as your life changes, like ours surely did tonight, we're here for you. Ciao, everyone.
You have been listening to the Life Changes Show on the BBS Radio Network. Listen live every Monday night at 7 p.m. Pacific Time and visit us online at lifechangesnetwork.com, on Facebook at The Life Changes Show, and on Twitter at Life Changes Show. Join us again next week as we consciously explore and embrace the only constant, life changes. The Life Changes Network is an entertainment network. The views and opinions expressed are those of the guests and participants and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of Life Changes.